You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up as the weather warms up, it's the perfect time to get outside and maybe do some scenic driving. We hear from a Wisconsin self-named road geek who likes to drive Wisconsin's highways end to end. And we hear about your best Wisconsin driving experiences. Now the legal fights continue over laws passed in last year's lame duck session. Yesterday, a second lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the laws got its first ruling. And it's another snag for state Republicans, with the judge blocking parts of the law for likely violating the state's constitution's separation of powers doctrine. Laurel White covers the state capitol for WPR, and she's been following the story closely. Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Judith.
This is a quickly moving story, as I'm sure you know and appreciate, Laurel, and a new decision came in this afternoon. What is the latest?
That's right. So actually, just moments ago, we have a ruling from the District 3 Court of Appeals in Wisconsin, and this has to do with a case that was ruled on last week. It's the other state challenge to the lame duck session. This is a case that was brought by the League of Women Voters and was a procedural argument that essentially sought to knock down the entire lame duck session, all of the laws passed in it, all of the appointments made within it, on grounds that lawmakers didn't have the authority in the state constitution to call that session in the first place. A Dane County judge last week ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, in favor of that argument, struck down the entire session. Republicans were quick to appeal that to a higher court, this District 3 Court of Appeals in central Wisconsin, and that district court has just sided with Republicans and put a stay, what they call a stay, on that Dane County judge's ruling. So essentially, as this case is pending appeal, those laws are back on the books for now. But that is a bit complicated by the other lame duck lawsuit that we have moving through the state court system right now.
That's right. And fill us in on that other case that there was also a recent decision on.
So there was a decision in that case yesterday. This is a case that's brought by a coalition of union groups. Their argument isn't procedural. It's more about the laws themselves that were passed during the lame duck session. They contend that they violate the state constitution's balance of power guarantee, essentially saying that lawmakers really overstepped their bounds in the lame duck session in terms of limiting the power of Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call. We got a decision in that case yesterday from a separate Dane County judge who also agreed with the plaintiffs, though he didn't agree with them entirely. He only put some of the lame duck laws on hold, not all of them.
So there are so many pieces to this, Laurel, it's hard to even know where to start. So when the judgment on Friday was made, the decision on Friday was made, the Evers administration took some steps based on that, I believe, pulling out of the Affordable Care Act lawsuit that the Walker administration had put into place. Also, about 80-something appointments that had been made during the lame duck session. Does this ruling now that just happened affect those actions?
It does. So essentially, Governor Evers acted on some of the powers that Dane County judge returned to him when it struck down the lame duck session. So the lame duck session restricted the governor's ability to leave multi-state federal lawsuits. It obviously nullified those 82 appointments that Governor Walker made and the Senate confirmed during the lame duck session. So Governor Evers was quick to, the first thing he did was withdraw the state or order the state attorney general to withdraw the state from that lawsuit. And then a day or so later, he withdrew all of those appointments. But now, because this decision has been stayed, essentially those powers are gone again. So, and this is something that Republican lawmakers were concerned about. They were very frustrated when the governor rescinded those Walker appointments, saying that it would kind of create chaos, and that it did create chaos by taking these people off of a variety of state boards, things like the Public Service Commission, the UW System Board of Regents, to name a couple, when they knew that this appeal and this potential decision that we just got this afternoon could happen and reinstate these folks. So essentially that's what's happening right now.
We're talking with WPR's state capitol reporter Laura White about the several lawsuits that are going on, different decisions being made on those, all related in some way to the lame duck session that happened in December. So, Laura, does anyone really know what is in place and what is not as of this afternoon?
Yes. So I think the key thing to remember here is that we have two different sets of rulings that we're watching that have binding control over what is on the books in terms of laws and what isn't right now, what's enforceable and what isn't. So according to this this stay that came in from the District 3 Court of Appeals in central Wisconsin, that previous ruling from the lame duck session that struck down the entire thing is no longer valid. However, there hasn't been an appellate ruling on the case that just got a decision yesterday. So the Dane County judge's ruling from yesterday that struck down some of the lame duck laws still stands. So the things that that judge's decision struck down were things like the legislature's ability to limit EVERS leaving federal lawsuits. So the governor's action on the Affordable Care Act lawsuit still stands. He still has the authority to do that under the second state lawsuit. So that is still in place. However, the appointments, I don't believe, were affected in the second ruling that came down yesterday. So we do have some back and forth that we're going to anticipate because of this appellate decision in regards to the appointments.
How are state Republicans responding to this?
Well, interestingly, just a couple hours ago, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald sent a letter to the 82 appointees that had been withdrawn by EVERS last week, saying that he was very frustrated that the governor had taken this move ahead of the appeals process. He thought it was pretty premature. He said that he hoped that the appointees would be patient and kind of wait out this legal battle, and that he hoped that it wouldn't, he said, quote, sour their, you know, their experience in serving state government. So I think it's pretty fair to say that Republican lawmakers are pretty frustrated with some of the governor's actions as these lawsuits are moving forward.
And as these decisions have come down, what has the response been from the EVERS administration?
The EVERS administration has been pretty pleased thus far until this latest development. I don't have a response from the governor's office quite yet on this latest appellate decision, but the governor's office was very pleased, of course, by the two Dane County rulings. His office said that that's what was expected all along. They believe that lawmakers had really overstepped their bounds in the lame duck session, gone too far, and really kind of worked outside the power structure that should be in place. So, you know, we have kind of both sides saying they believe that they are within the rights of the state constitution here, and this is something that is certainly going to go all the way up to the state Supreme Court at some point.
Which there is an election in less than a week to seat a new state Supreme Court justice. Is this expected to be resolved before that winner would be seated?
You know, it's really hard to say. I do know that the District 3 appellate court ruling that came down just an hour or so ago did set an expedited process for the appeal. They're asking briefs to be in that case by the end of next month. Obviously, we will have a new justice elect by that time. So it is looking like that the new justice will be in place to rule on these cases.
And Laurel, we've been talking about the two state-level challenges to the lame duck laws. There are also federal challenges. Where do those stand?
There are. So there are two federal challenges. One of them was ruled on in January. That's a challenge that specifically looks at the early voting restrictions that were passed during the lame duck legislative session. Those have been knocked down by a federal district judge. They are now before a federal appellate court. Arguments haven't been heard in that appellate court yet. And then a second case that's brought by the Democratic Party, the state Democratic Party, argues that the lame duck session violated the U.S. Constitution's guarantee clause, which guarantees a representative form of government, a Republican form of government with a lowercase r, And that case hasn't heard arguments at all yet. So that's pretty early in the process.
So what should we be kind of keeping track of as next steps in all of the legal challenges that are centered around this lame duck session?
I think the next big thing to look for would be an appellate court ruling on the second state case to see if that ruling is stayed as well pending appeal. If that happens, all of the governor's powers that were taken away from him in the lame duck session and then returned in the first rulings would be taken away from him again.
Well, Laurel, thank you so much for keeping track of all this and helping us make sense of it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That was Laurel White, WPR's state capitol reporter. She was with us to talk about the second court ruling to block parts of Republicans' lame duck laws. Also, late-breaking information on a stay that was also granted in a different one of the lawsuits. Coming up, we'll talk with Maureen McCollum of Wisconsin Life to hear about her latest project, working with students to tell their stories through audio. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up, the best road trips of your life could be waiting for you right here in Wisconsin. We talk about finding the specialness in small-town diners, old farmhouses, back roads, and more. Now, Maureen McCollum joins us to talk about a new project that's helping young people tell their stories in a radio piece format. She's a producer of Wisconsin Life and our newest project, Why Wisconsin. Maureen, good to have you back on Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Judith.
So how did this project get started?
So I've been working with a group of high school students from Monona Grove Liberal Arts Charter School, more commonly known as MG21. And when I took on the Wisconsin Life role, I really wanted to diversify the voices that we heard on the air. And when you think of diversity, that also applies to younger people. So I wanted to hear from more teenagers and what their life experience was like here in Wisconsin.
And so what has your experience been working in the school with these students?
It's been amazing. It's been one of like the highlights of my life has been working with the high school students at MG21. When we started this project out, I was working with two different classes, about 25 students, and just teaching them the basics of audio production and radio production. So each of them went out and did like a StoryCorps type interview. So they interviewed a friend or a family member. A lot of the students are into poetry, so we had students who wrote poetry and then, you know, recorded themselves reading it, maybe added some music on to, you know, give it a little more of a dramatic effect. Other people just wrote essays and personal stories about themselves and then, you know, edited that down and put it on the radio.
So it sounds like this was really driven by the students and their interests and their experiences. It wasn't like maybe a more typical kind of assignment where it's like, you will write this many words on this topic. Go.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I did not want to have to dictate to the students saying, like, please tell me what it's like to be a youth in America today. It was like, what are the things that you care about in your life? What are the things that you want people to know about yourself? And they went out and told stories about that. You know, and a lot of it is personal stuff, but these are the things that they want to talk about.
How did they accept the idea that they could make radio? I mean, I would think it could be a little intimidating, but maybe not.
I mean, it's like a mixed bag. It'd be like with anyone. There were some students who immediately were super excited to be working on the radio, like, oh my gosh, I love radio. And other students who said, what is radio? Like, my mom listens to the radio. But once we got into it, I think a lot of them really liked it. We have, you know, in this current semester, I've been working with a group of seven students really closely. Seven students who decided they wanted to keep going and wanted to keep talking about radio. You know, some of the students, there's a couple who are musicians, so they interviewed each other about creating music in their different ways. I have a student who's really, really interested in history, specifically military history. And so I set him up with a veteran. And so he interviewed a veteran. And also I interviewed this student separately about his own interest in history. Yeah. So it's just really a mixed bag. And yeah, whatever it is that they're interested in, I wanted to really foster that and encourage them to keep exploring.
Well, let's listen to one of the stories that you helped a student put together.
Yeah. There's a very special pair of classmates at MG21, a charter high school in Monona. One is a junior.
I'm Tierra Byrne, and this is Lou, or Nibbler is his nickname.
Lou is a rabbit.
He's black, and he looks like he's brown in the sunlight, and he has little white hairs throughout his body. He's really, really, really soft. Like, really soft.
Sometimes, Lou comes to school with Tierra. On the days the rabbit is in the classroom with her, Tierra is beaming. The self-described big-time animal lover proudly carries Lou around in a small black and brown carrier filled with hay. One afternoon, Tierra and I hung out in the school library with Lou, where she quietly told me more about her beloved pet and classmate.
What are you feeding him?
Just an apple and some carrots.
Why do you like to bring him to school? Like, what days do you decide you want to bring him?
Mostly if I'm having, like, a bad day, I'll bring him just because he kind of just calms me down and he's goofy, so he kind of makes me laugh a lot.
Tierra and Lou mean a lot to one another. She recently wrote this essay about her favorite classmate of all time.
I believe that Lou is not only the best pet I've ever had, but also the best classmate I've ever had. Some people just assume having a rabbit is easy work and that they just sit around being cute, which they do, but rabbits are also very smart, social, and affectionate. They can also be very bratty, willful, and destructive. I think it takes a special kind of person to be able to handle all of those traits at once. I'm someone who is very good with a rabbit like Lou because I'm not short on love or patience. I have plenty to share. Before I had Lou come to school with me, I didn't really feel like I brought much to my school, and I couldn't figure out what I could do to change that. The first time I brought him to school was during our animal study tour. He was being very good, and the teachers loved him and asked me if I wanted to bring him in more often. When I started bringing him in, I noticed some changes in myself and in my behavior because of Lou, and so did my teachers. I was a lot more calm and could focus on my schoolwork better just by having him around. I was making new friends through Lou because he is a great conversation starter. I get a lot of questions about him and why he's in school with me. Everyone loves him and wants to pet him and hold him. Lou became somewhat of a celebrity around my school. This year I learned that Lou is a trendsetter because many others see the joys of pets in bringing their own pet to school. In fact, now we have Pet Fridays where teachers encourage many students to bring pets to school. It's really nice having animals in school because it makes the learning environment more interesting and exciting. Before coming to MG21, I imagined the only classmates I'd ever have were human ones. However, the day I decided to bring Lou into school, I learned and have since taught others that sometimes pets can be the best classmates we can ask for.
That essay was by Tierra Bird, a junior at Monona Grove Liberal Arts Charter School. She wrote about her favorite classmate, Lou the Rabbit. We'll be hearing more from MG21 students throughout the year. And one more thing about these two. If you're wondering what Tierra's favorite thing is that Lou does, besides looking super cute, he has a particular move that gets her every time.
They're called binkies when he, like, jumps up in the air and twists his back legs. And he does that only when he's extremely happy. So I know he's happy.
That's so cute.
It's really cute.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Yes, you are Maureen McCollum, and she's right here with us. Wow, what a great story.
Isn't that so sweet?
It really is. And you can sense that, how much Lou the rabbit means to Tierra, but also you can feel that kind of blossoming that she talked about as she's telling the story.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that on a lot of the students where, I mean, you put the average person in front of a microphone, it's really intimidating. You and I are used to it because it's part of our everyday lives and our jobs, but if you stick a microphone in someone's face, who, like, what do you do with that? And, you know, so once Tierra recorded her story, she told me she felt so much better afterwards. And, like, even just listening to that piece, like, I think there were a lot of the students who I've just watched them become more confident in, like, just sharing their story and just maybe even being more comfortable around me as the school year has gone on.
Sure. What are you hearing from teachers about the project?
Well, shout out to the teachers at MG21 School. They are amazing, wonderful humans. They're all huge public radio fans, too. So they are extra excited about this project. But I think they're just jazzed that we're giving, you know, these students a platform to really share their voice and share their ideas and their opinions about who they are and what they care about. And I think that's really important. I think, you know, it's really necessary that we listen to young people. Mm-hmm. You know, often we hear about adults talking about youth culture. Right, like, I'd rather hear young people talk about what it's like to be young.
We love bringing young people onto Central Time, so we're right there with you. Briefly, Maureen, where do you hope this project goes in the future?
Well, at the end of the school year, we will be putting together an hour-long program that focuses on the stories that the MG21 students did. And yeah, it's going to be a wide variety of pieces. I mentioned music, history, personal identity essays, poetry, music. It's gonna be really wonderful, and I'm really, really, really excited for it.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing that and talking with you about it as it gets closer. Maureen, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Maureen McCollum is the producer of Wisconsin Life and Wisconsin. You can find Tierra's story to share with your family and friends and all of the Wisconsin Life pieces at wisconsinlife.org. You can also learn more about our newest series project, Wisconsin, and submit your question about the state at wpr.org/Wisconsin. That's W-H-Y. Coming up, we're joined for a second time by a Wisconsin road geek who has made it his mission to travel Wisconsin's trunk highways and back roads to discover more about what makes our state so special. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up tomorrow after 6 on the morning show, the years between 1900 and 1920 are known in baseball history as the dead ball era due to the low scoring games and the sport's emphasis on defense and pitching. John Munson and his guest recall some of the larger than life players who stood out in that era. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, is there a part of the state you've never really visited? A state park or a restaurant you've heard of that's been on your list to check out? That might be a great opportunity to make a little extra time to take some roads less traveled, like Wisconsin's trunk highways, scenic byways, and back roads. Our next guest knows the value in taking a drive just to see what's there, and maybe some of you have discovered that as well. He's driven all over Wisconsin on state trunk highways, driving them from end to end wherever the roads may go. Sometimes their paths make sense. Sometimes they don't at all. We want to hear your stories at 800-642-1234. Did you take any interesting drives this winter? What's the most interesting thing you've come across while driving through Wisconsin, whether it was on a back road, a trunk highway, or maybe just your regular commute? Do you have an attraction, restaurant, or other type of place that you think is a hidden gem? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back for round two of Wisconsin Driving, Eric Paulson co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. He's also a radio DJ on Milwaukee's 95.7 and Rewind 92.1 in Madison. He runs a Wisconsin road trip website called statetrunktour.com, and he's joining us from our Milwaukee studios. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Judith. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, well, we had so much fun with you the first time. We thought, why not? And spring, you know, I think everybody's kind of getting an itch to get outside, go somewhere. You know, and we talked with you back in January. For listeners who missed that talk, tell us a little bit about your project.
Well, I do agree on the spring fever right now. It's sunny. It's in the upper 50s over here, at least. And everybody's out running and looking around. Great time to start thinking about road trips. And the reason I started State Trunk Tour is out of just really a childhood curiosity. I was always fascinated with roads and where they lead to. And the numbered system, if you followed, like when I was a little kid, I lived in Oconomowoc. If you just followed 16, for example, out of town, where would it take you? Where would 67 take you? And that just kind of, it was something that was always an interest of mine. And I got the idea to turn it into a state trunk tour, oh gosh, about 12 years ago now at this point.
And what is a trunk highway, for those who aren't familiar with the term?
Trunk highways actually started with the railroads, and a trunk route is anything that connects two points of importance. So when they had the railroads as trunk routes, and then when they started a road system, they just brought the trunk term over there too. I mean, it's kind of an old term in a way. I'm almost bringing it back. But Wisconsin was the first governmental unit in the world to use a numbering system for highways. So that's another unique twist about our state that I think adds to this.
You know, when we talked with you last time, we found out that a lot of people have some kind of hobby that also goes along with driving around. For some, it might be fishing or hunting. Others maybe enjoy checking out a new hiking spot or maybe even finding a restaurant or antique stores. Do you have something like that that's kind of an excuse for getting out on those back roads?
You know, for me, it's just a general wanderlust, if you will. I love driving around and just seeing what's there. But seeing how some of these roads can tie together all of those different places, I think is really interesting. And some of the roads do tie together more than usual state parks or beaches or harbor towns or things like that. So that's a nice theme that goes along with the end-to-end part of the highway.
And when you're doing these drives, how do you plan them out, or do you?
I don't. I kind of have a general idea of where I want to go and where I want to end up. You know, I don't want to find myself in Superior with no plan on where to stay. But part of the fun of this is just have a general idea of where you want to go and how you want to get there, and then deviate from that plan as you see fit as you go. And that's part of the fun.
And do you have a preference of like a paper map or an atlas to like literally map out where you're going, or do you use GPS on your phones? What's your technique?
I'm pretty old school, but that's because I have a photographic memory and I can find my way around even without a map a lot of times. So I almost look at GPS as kind of a replacement for me. I don't welcome sometimes, but it's very handy to have that. I love the Gazetteer, like the DeLorme Atlas, that has all of these details from the roads to the really side roads, landforms, and things like that. That's my favorite map to use. But with GPS technology getting better and they're getting to be more detailed, that's certainly where everything's going.
I will tell you, I am the opposite of you, because I will look at a map and be sure that I know where I'm going, and I will go in the exactly opposite way. But hey, for your plan, that works fine, right?
To each their own, right?
We are talking with Eric Paulson. He co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. And he runs a Wisconsin road trip website called statetrunktour.com. And we are talking about some of the fun ways to get out and explore Wisconsin. You know, we did a feature few months ago, I think it was, about how reliant many of us have gotten on knowing exactly where we are going to eat or where we are going to shop or where we're going to stay, and relying on things like TripAdvisor or Yelp to make sure that we're, you know, quote unquote, not making a mistake. Mm-hmm. I am guessing that you are more of a just see what's out there and take your chances.
I like having it's like I write it all in pencil and I'm willing to erase and rewrite as necessary, because once you actually go out there and immerse yourself in your surroundings in a different area or a different part of the state, you might change your mind. And it's good to have the kind of flexibility where you're free to do that. So you might want to stay at a certain hotel, but then you might decide this bed and breakfast is better, or vice versa. And, you know, you might take a lot more time to get where you plan on going because there's so many cool things along the way to see. You want to stop and take a little time out. So I do prefer it that way.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite meandering roads around Wisconsin? Do you like having a destination, or is it more about the trip getting there than where you're ending up? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. And Todd in Janesville is up. Hi, Todd.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When my girlfriend and I, when we head up to Madeline Island, there's a little club called the Kimball Inn, and it's right up high, right when you go through, right when you take a left on Highway 2, it's like 5 miles down the right-hand side. It only opens at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's a great little supper club. The couple's out of Chicago, and they just opened it probably 3 or 4 years ago. They reopened it. And then another thing is, a lot of people make it up to Bayfield, but they don't get on the ferry to go check out the island. And there's some beautiful, beautiful state park out there and really nice beaches out on Madeline. So people should get out of, you know, once they get up to Minocqua, take a day trip and go up to check out the Apostle Islands. They're kind of our state park's most beautiful area that people don't visit.
That's great. Thanks, Todd. And is there a particular highway or road that you like to take to get up there?
This one we take Highway 2 over, and then you can stop at another place. You can stop at Copper Falls, which is a really nice waterfall area.
That's great. Thank you so much. And it sounds like Todd is really into your idea there, Eric.
Yeah, Copper Falls is really beautiful. It's actually along Highway 169, just off of Highway 13. And 169 connects US 2 and Highway 13. It's near the town of Mellon up there in the Northwoods. There's also Potato Falls near there. That's gorgeous. And yeah, his has observations about Bayfield. Really beautiful place. And actually in the winter, when the bay there freezes up, Highway 13 has a little state highway spur that goes over to Madeline Island when the ice can hold up. But if you get a chance to drive over there in the winter or ferry in the summer, you check out La Pointe on Madeline Island, and he's right, the beaches are beautiful up there.
Well, and Todd mentioned something that I hadn't thought of before. He was talking about that supper club that was just opened in the last 3 or 4 years. And so to me, that would be an argument for revisiting some routes, even if you've done it once. If it's been a few years, there might actually be different things to see and do.
Yeah, and supper clubs are a great theme. Travel Wisconsin, the state tourism agency, did a whole thing on supper clubs. There's a couple of books out on it, and so I will do some articles on it as well, tying it into the roads. First supper club in the state is near Plover, Whiting, that area, on Business US 51, which is the original main highway through there. And there aren't too many new supper clubs. I definitely want to check that one out that Todd mentioned.
Let's go back to the phones, and Jan in Madison is up. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
What would you like to tell us?
I'd love to tell you about experiencing Pepin, Wisconsin, on the Great River Road. And if you get off the road a little and go into town, you'll see beautiful wide part of spot of the Mississippi River called Lake Pepin.
Well, the sound quality is not great, Jan, so we'll leave it there. But Lake Pepin, she says there's a winery and a great restaurant plus sailing. And for Laura Ingalls Wilder fans, that's also an important place in the Little House books.
The Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum is actually right along Highway 35 in the Great River Road in town. There are wineries out there. And yeah, Lake Pepin, one of the widest natural spots on the Mississippi River. In fact, the sport of water skiing was invented right there.
Really?
In the early 1920s. You're in the middle of the Driftless area. Other places near there like Maiden Rock, Fountain City, Alma. That's such a beautiful area and a beautiful drive. And it's considered one of the most beautiful drives in the nation.
Doug on Facebook says, in southwest Wisconsin, if you want a nice little loop of a ride, take from Lancaster, take 61 north out of town to Fenimore, all the way to Boscobel. From Boscobel, take State 60 towards Muscadet, where 60 intersects with 80, take 80 into Muscadet, and it goes on from there.
He's absolutely right. That's a beautiful area. And coming up in May, the Morel Mushroom Festival is happening in Muscadet. And that's actually a very fun time, and you can get a great deal on some wonderful mushrooms that are considered a huge delicacy in France and all over the world.
They are delicious, I will say that. We're talking with Eric Paulson, co-host of the Discover Wisconsin show, Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. We're talking about his website and project called statetrunktour.com, where he drives highways end-to-end to explore the state and find some hidden treasures along the way. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite highway you've enjoyed the views on? Is there a highway near you that you think people should check out? Do you have a favorite Wisconsin road trip experience or story? We'd love to hear it. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Stay with us. We'll pick up this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. We're continuing our conversation talking about the joys of driving a highway from end to end and finding small discoveries along the way. Eric Paulson co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee, and he runs a Wisconsin road trip website called statetrunktour.com. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's the best highway to follow in Wisconsin and why? Do you think Wisconsin makes a good place for road trips? What's your favorite Wisconsin road trip memory? And what's a place you think Eric needs to check out, or me for that matter? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And let's go back to the phones, and Jackie in Tomahawk is up. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hi. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I live up in Tomahawk, Wisconsin, and of course I'm a little bit partial, but every year we have the Tomahawk Fall Ride, which is, you know, for motorcyclists, but it doesn't matter. We have so many different little country roads that go out west to Tim's Hill, and that's a beautiful area to go during the fall and see the fall colors. Mm. And then we have also Kelly Castle. I don't know of any other castle that's built in the state of Wisconsin, but Pete Kelly's building a beautiful castle that's actually off the beaten path, and you have to cross a moat to get there. And,
wow.
And they do a medieval enactment. I think that's one thing that you really have to go check out. But it's only open during that weekend of the Tomahawk Fall Ride. And then we have so many beautiful rustic roads that run Tomahawk to Minocqua and Eagle River and Manitowish Waters and Three Lakes. And all those rustic roads, and even the where the American Legion veteran camp is, It just doesn't matter. Those little roads to get on, and whether you're on a motorcycle or a car or your truck or a tractor or your horses, you can just see, you know, wildlife everywhere. There's turkeys and deer and porcupines and eagles, and it's just amazing. I just love living in the North Woods, and I grew up in Minneapolis, and you couldn't make me move away from Wisconsin.
Wow. Well, thank you, Jackie. That sounds like about as good a testimonial as you could hope for.
Jackie's quite the evangelizer for that area. And she's absolutely right. A drive down Highway 86 from Tomahawk to Tim's Hill, especially in the fall, you have cranberry bogs, the changing of the leaves. Really, really beautiful. And I'll have to check out Kelly Castle. The only other one I know in the state is the Mars Cheese Castle. Very different place.
Yes. Yeah. And I have to say I'm a big medieval history fan, so I would love to see the reenactment stuff there. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones at 800-642-1234. And Diane in Oregon is up. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I called to recommend one of my very favorite places to drive to that's actually only about 20 miles from Oregon. I think it's only like 5 or 6 miles from Stoughton, and that is Cooksville. It's just a charming, charming, tiny little town. It's got several just beautiful little brick cottages. There's a general store that's open Thursdays to Sundays. They have great ice cream. But it's just a charming little place. It's got an interesting history, too. That whole patch that Cooksville is on originally was given to Daniel Webster when movement west, when this area was being settled. And so actually everybody that lives, Webster may have been a signer of the Constitution. I'm not sure, but in any case, everybody who lives in Cooksville can actually trace the ownership of their house back to Daniel Webster, which is kind of cool.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm. Cooksville, is that something you're familiar with, Eric?
Well, it's on Highway 59, and I've been through it, but I didn't know that little tidbit of history, but I'm certainly open to adding it because there's so much uncovered history and information along these roads. I mean, I'm still just scratching the surface on this, and I've got quite a bit on there already.
Well, thanks for that call, Diane. And Eric, how do you think driving through a part of the state you might not be familiar with, or maybe taking a less direct route through a part of the state that you maybe go through a lot but don't really spend time in, how does that maybe change your perspective on the state we live in?
Well, I mean, the nooks and crannies of this state are where the most interesting stuff lies. I mean, the interstate gets you places quickly. But if you take, for example, if you take highways 12 and 16 from Wisconsin Dells to Toma, I mean, the interstate's the route almost everybody takes. If you take 12 and 16, the original road before the interstates, you go through all those little towns that you only know that there might be a quick trip there or something like that. You go through the middle of these little towns, you see the churches, you see the historical markers, you see all of the charm of the downtowns, the lakes and the rivers and the people. It really does change your perspective, because then these places that are just words on an exit sign suddenly become, you know, living, breathing places you may not have thought of as much before.
Let's go back to the phones, and Michelle in Partyville is up. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Hi, I'm calling. I don't really have like a favorite route that I take, but just something I wanted to share that my husband and I like to do is whenever we are going to travel somewhere in Wisconsin, we have an American Dairyland map that shows all the dairies. It also shows like the cheer stores, the cheese stores also. But so if we're heading somewhere, we look on the map and we will, you know, deviate from our route just to go to a dairy just to buy cheese, especially like on a Friday when they have the fresh curd.
Oh, I bet. So cheese tourism. Eric, are there other kind of themes like that that people might want to investigate?
Well, that is a great theme. I'm actually working on a couple of cheese shop tour routes right now. So those will be on the site in the coming weeks. And it's funny with Partyville, it's a fun little town. The watermelon seed spitting competition is there every year. There's always fun events in these towns. But there's a lot of other, you know, great themes. You know, you want to check out ancient landforms. You want to check out cheese shops, farm to table dining you can do. That's becoming a huge thing around the state. And so there are certainly a lot of themes. There's no shortage.
I would say also probably breweries and wineries.
Keeping up with how many craft breweries and wineries and now distilleries have gone up around the state is an unbelievable job. I mean, I'm having to just travel all over the place, but I'm okay with it.
My niece and her partner love to travel waterfall to waterfall.
Yes. And if you're in Marinette County, there's a ton of them in close proximity. And then, like we mentioned, Copper Falls and Potato Falls up there. And then Big Manitou is an Amnicon Falls State Park up near Superior. I highly recommend those places. Big Manitou, actually, the fourth highest waterfall east of the Rockies in the nation. So, yeah.
Let's sneak one more call in. Lois from Eau Claire. Hi, Lois.
Hello. I'm calling. I grew up in Pepin, Wisconsin. On Sunday afternoons in the 50s and 60s, my parents and my sister and I would travel the county roads west of Pepin, Stockholm, and Maiden Rock through the bluffs and the valleys. And we'd sometimes get a little lost, and we'd drive into a farmyard, and someone would come outside, and they would know my mom because she was a high school history teacher in Pepin, and they would say hello and steer us on our way.
Thank you for that, Lois. That sounds like the perfect way to do this, Eric. Just drive and maybe get a little lost, but, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of great county roads and everything, and some of the more notable ones I want to cover pretty soon, too, because especially in that part of the state, I mean, they're up and down winding through these valleys, and it's such a beautiful area that there's a lot more to cover, and I can't wait to do it and get some great pictures.
And that's another thing. I mean, we're so focused on taking pictures of experiences now. I think sometimes it's better maybe take a picture or two, but don't always have a lens between you and what you're seeing.
Yeah, you need to experience it with your own eyes and really take it in. You know, a lot of people just immediately, they grab a quick selfie with the stuff in the background that they want to see, and then they're on their way. You know, sit and look and enjoy and just take it all in. That would be my suggestion.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for joining us again. It's been so much fun. I'm sure we'll be calling on you again.
That'd be great. I'd love to come back. Thank you, Judith.
Eric Paulson joined us from our Milwaukee studios. He co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. He's also a radio DJ on Milwaukee's 95.7 and Rewind 92.1 in Madison. He joined us to give us some ideas about short local road trips you might consider taking this spring. And you can find more on his website called statetrunktour.com.